answer knows. Body sways to melody, toss of coal black hair. Her hips in rhythm with the drums in the patchouli.
That singer should know, as she has taught belly dancing and guitar and, oh yeah, she's been writing and recording openly lesbian music since the mid-1980s. She's Jamie Anderson, and she's my special guest on Queer Music Heritage this month. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I first interviewed Jamie in 2002, though I have done several very short interviews over the years when I featured her CDs on the radio news magazine This Way Out. This is the first full interview in that time, so let's get to it. This is your 10th album. How was preparing for this one different?
Well, I know what I'm doing.
You're the one.
Yeah. I mean, my very first recording, I was working in the dark and I couldn't find a light switch, you know, so I kind of just learned as I went. I mean, back then I didn't know anybody who'd make an album, so I just made it up. And fortunately, I had some musicians working with me and an engineer working with me who could help me. And, you know, over the years, I've learned a little bit more and a little bit more until finally for this 10th album, I used a studio that I'd used a little bit before, and I knew that it was going to go well and use some great musicians I've worked with before, and I'm really pleased with it.
So how has your process evolved, the album process?
I don't know. I feel more confident. I'm more prepared. I wish I'd known this much when I first started, although the learning process was fun.
Oh, yeah, I get that. I wish I knew when I started radio what I know now.
Yeah.
So this 10th album, I'm thinking that doesn't count Heart Resort.
No. So if you count Heart Resort, which is my very first recording, which is a tape I put out in, I don't know, you probably know better than 86, maybe?
86.
Yeah. Well, I really didn't know what I was doing, man.
That's the one you've ordered me not to play.
No, I think I gave you permission to play one or two songs, didn't I?
I think one. Yeah, I played one, but sparingly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about being a musician who records is that we do all of our learning in public. So,
so this is your first album, Living in Canada. Was that any influence on the album artistically?
Well, there is one song about moving to Canada, so it does talk about my process of moving up there. It's a funny song called For Love.
Well, you were just complaining about you couldn't get cheese in a can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that song is kind of whiny. You know, no cheese in a can, no Little Debbie snack cakes. I mean, what's a woman to do? I think living in Canada hasn't quite influenced me yet. I've only been there for 3 years.
Let's talk some more about that song. It's called For Love.
For Love is that song that I hope immigration never takes me seriously about. Because, you know, every time a Canadian says, what are you doing up here? You know, because I grew up in Arizona, and then I lived in North Carolina, and then I'm in Canada, right? And I keep moving north. Most people move south. And Canadians look at me and they say, what are you doing here? It's not that they don't love their country. They just, you know, they know about the weather, right?
Yeah.
So this song was kind of my answer to, hey, this is why I'm in Canada. The punchline towards the end is, I moved to Canada for love and a health card. So I'm really hoping immigration knows that that's a joke, because I did move there for love. That part is true. But the health card part, while that's a great benefit, it's certainly not the reason I moved up there.
Have you performed that song in both the U.S. and Canada? And if so, compare the crowd reactions.
You know, when I first wrote the song, I performed it in the States, and I got a lot of blank stares because the third verse has a lot of Canadian things in it. And so I quit doing it for a little while, but then I realized that, you know, a lot of Americans would find some of it funny and would get some of it. So what I do when I do it in the States is I perform the song, and then I do a little speech for the Canadian Challenged, and I explained about Timmy's and Beaver Tails and Boxing Day and why we love the Queen. And it makes for an entertaining show. Now, when I play it in Canada, they totally get it, and they always laugh, you know, in all the right places, which is great. And it's funny because, you know, Canadian audiences know a lot about America, but the reverse is not true. So when I sing that song in Canada, and I mention Sarah Palin, when I make the joke at the end about I can't see Russia from my yard, they totally get it. I don't have to explain anything to them.
Okay, well, let's hear the song For Love.
Snow and ice people look at me and they try to be nice. Then comes the question I dread. They look at me like I'm not right in the head. Yes, I could be in the USA eating cheese in a can every day. Card. What keeps me here, they want to know next. Well, there's no Sarah Palin or creepy rednecks. Sure, there are hosers, but they're far from me. I think they're all in Calgary. Yes, I could be in the U.S. of A getting mail delivered on Saturday. Doing without that stuff isn't hard in Canada. I have love and a health card. We love Timmy's, we love the Queen, we drink double doubles with our poutine. Beaver Tails and Boxing Day, and the tea party is so far away. Yes, I could be in the U.S. of A eating Little Debbie snack cakes every day. My heart in Canada, I have.
was your first exposure to women's music?
It was a Teresa Dell concert in Phoenix, Arizona in 1977. I remember it very clearly because I had never heard anyone sing about Our Lives.
She was the first women's artist I heard also.
Oh.
In Norfolk, Virginia. Didn't you have a story about lesbian concentrate?
Oh, I thought you were asking about live music. Yeah, it was actually the same year, and I can't remember if I found the album before or after that Teresa Dell concert. But I am a voracious reader and used to frequent the women's bookstore there. And I'd always walk right past the rack with the LPs in it because I thought, well, it's not Carole King. Why should I bother? Right? I knew nothing about independent musicians. And then one day I saw this album with a picture of an orange juice can on it. And I was intrigued. So I actually went over to the rack and picked it up and looked at it. And I thought, well, this looks interesting. It looks like it might be funny. I was concerned about Anita Bryant and what she was up to. This was 77, and she was in full force in those days. And I looked at the back, and it was a compilation. And I remember thinking, oh, well, you know, it's a whole bunch of different artists. So, you know, I may not like all of it, but maybe I'll like a couple of the artists. And I took it home, and it didn't leave my turntable for weeks. I mean, I memorized all the songs. I learned to play some of them. It was amazing. And again, it was like, you know, here are women singing about my life. This is amazing.
Well, let's get to your new one. The first track on the CD is the title track called Dare. Tell me about that song and why you chose to call the album after it.
I think the song has some important messages. You know, I wrote it for me, but I think other people might get something out of it. And it was inspired by something I heard a woman in a bar say one time. I didn't know her very well. She'd bought me a drink and we were having a casual conversation. And she said, I believe in looking as young as I can afford. And then she went on to tell me about all of her plastic surgery, and it was a little uncomfortable, you know, because I am all about having positive body image. That does not include plastic surgery, but I chose not to say anything then because we were in a bar just having a drink, but it stayed with me. And so that line made its way into the first verse, and I thought, well, you know, daring to be yourself sometimes is difficult in our society. You know, we're encouraged to look younger, richer, not to be ourselves. And so what that song is, it's about, you know, to be ourselves and how strong that can be for us and for everybody else too. And so the second verse is about buying love, which too many of us try to do. It's like, oh, well, I don't have a good enough job. She's not going to want me. Well, that's not true. It's all about love. And love is free. And I thought that was a good message. And I also kind of liked the ideas that I had for an album cover. I thought, dare. Well, I could be, you know, stepping off the edge of the Grand Canyon or something. So that's what the cover is.
There's a sparkle in her eye, but no crinkle at the edges when she smiles. Everything's in place. She's carefully bored. She says she looks as young as she can afford. It's clear to everyone what she's got, but I'd rather have a face I earned than one I tear in her look if she cries. She's hanging on his arm. They all admire. She's another pretty thing he has acquired. That reveals the light. A crinkle at the edge only enhances our smile. And true love cannot be measured. It's there for you and me. The softest touch, the sweetest kiss is is always free. It's the kind of spark that never burns. Dare to live a life. Dare to live a life. Dare to live a life. You but no crinkle at the edges.
The next song I want to cover, there's a bit of philosophy in Black and White. What's the reaction been to that song?
People really like that one. I have a good friend of mine, Ted Warmbrand, who was all his life a folk singer. And he sang about all kinds of issues. You know, if there was a political event, he was there. And he's retired now, and he just spends time with his grandkids and that's something that he said all the time. The more gray I get, the less black and white I see. And I'm finding that true for myself. You know, we're all slowing down a little bit, those of us who've been out there.
It's wisdom, and, Jamie, wisdom.
Yeah, yeah. And I finally told Ted after he said it one more time, I said, either you write the song or I will. And he said, you can. So I wrote it.
I was sure years ago I knew everything there was to know. Thought I knew dark from light, when to stand my ground, when to fight. But then I learned to let it be. The more gray I get, less black and white I see. I tell you how it came to this. Every day was a special kiss. I fell into the arms of hope, never knowing how it goes, and I learned to let it be. The more gray I get, the less black and white I see. Indigo, the blackest. Or brightest white, it all depends on the light, on the light. Black and white I see. The last black and white I see.
I was very pleased to hear the song Run, which I think is the comedy hit of the CD. And what was the inspiration for that song?
My Facebook friends helped me write that. See, if you're my Facebook friend, you don't just see pictures of my breakfast. You get to help me write songs. And what I did was I posted to my Facebook page, when was that moment you knew the relationship was over? And I got, I don't know, 60, 70 responses from people, and some of them were pretty incredible. I mean, some of them were the usual, you know, he was cheating on me. But some of them were like, it's like, this has to be a song, right? So the woman said, when I realized those 38 cats were all hers, I thought, 38? Well, that rhymes with a lot. And so I just put, it's a laundry list of all the reasons why someone might leave someone else. What I was thinking about when I wrote it was, you know, all the times that, you know, someone in my life has started dating someone new, and I look at them and I think, oh man, I don't know if this is such a great idea. And I just wanted to tell them to run, you know. So I thought, I'll just put the most outrageous things in a whole list. And that way, you know, if anyone has someone in their life who is dating someone very wrong for them, then they can just copy that song and send it off to them.
Does humor go better with a waltz beat?
Yes, it does.
Okay, folks, pay attention to the lyrics of the song, Run.
You say she makes all your dreams come true. She's funny and smart and loves all you do. She might pop the question, you know you'll say yes. Do you wonder why all your friends look distressed? We know she's pretty and you have lots of fun, but take our advice.
For this next song, I need to tell you about the way I listen to new CDs. I play them in the car, and I purposely do not look at the liner notes or the lyrics or anything, because I want to be surprised by what I hear. I want it to kind of roll over me. So, you could imagine what I might have been thinking on the song before you sang the line, "My yoga teacher hates me."
That's what we call in the comedy world a really long setup.
Yeah.
It's just a goofy little song. I really do practice yoga, and I had a teacher at one time a few years ago that was so judgmental. I just thought I'd write an evil little song about her, and it turned into something else.
Again, the name of the song is Yoga Teacher.
Lay down here, she says. Closer like this. I want to please her. I'm at her will, but some pretty, yet so cruel as she puts her hand on my knee. Commands me to stand, reach for the sky. I feel dizzy, for her I fall. She looks me in the eye. You've got to try harder than that, she says with an evil glee. My yoga teacher hates me. Is out. Please let me quit. I think I wrenched my back. No, not the strap. My yoga teacher loves me. She loves me.
The song Dream was different in that you didn't write the lyrics. Could you talk about that one?
When I was a teenager, I fell in love with an older woman. I was 15 and she was 17. She drove a restored Model A. She never wore shoes and she wrote poetry. And how could I not fall in love, right? And I wrote my very first songs with her. She wrote the lyrics and I wrote the music. But we were just kids, you know, they were just little beginner songs. And we broke up not long after I got out of high school. We stayed in touch for a while and then I lost track of her. And I tried to find her over the years and was unsuccessful until about 4 years ago. I got this somewhat cryptic email, and I thought, wow, that sounds like Lois. Wow, that can't be her. Because I'll tell you, you know, I do get mail occasionally from weirdos because I have such a big presence on the net, and I've been touring for so long and all that. And I thought, you know, this could be another one of those weirdos. So I wrote back a question for her that only Lois would know. And she wrote back, and she answered it, and she thought that was hysterical that I would, you know, question it. And it was her. I'd found her, you know, after not seeing her for 20 years. And we were able to meet in person not long after that, and I asked her if she was still writing poetry, and she said no. And then shortly after that, I got a poem from her in the mail, and I thought, well, this needs music. I put music to it. And then she came to the National Women's Music Festival last year, and I told that story, and she was sitting in the front row, and she was beaming from ear to ear. I mean, it was so exciting to have her right there and to also record the song because, you know, writing with someone really opens up some different things because, you know, when you write the lyrics and the music, you tend to go to the same themes and the same kinds of presentations, and this one forced me a little out of my comfort zone because it's a song that talks a little bit about, you know, the sixth sense and knowing something but not knowing something and about the mystery of dreams. And those are not topics that I would normally explore. So it was really nice to be able to write that song with her. And then earlier this year, she was able to come to another one of my shows. And I told the story. And as soon as I said, and she's right here in the front row, the entire audience leapt to their feet in wild applause. And then after I was done with the song, they did it again. And Lois stood up and again, just beaming. Now, you have to know that this is a woman who works the swing shift at Walmart in Reno, Nevada, who just has a few close friends, and this was such a thrill for her. And I had to take her aside, though. I had to say, you know, it's not always like this, Lois.
Really? And the song is called The Dream.
I dreamed about a visit to a woman that I knew, and just before the week was out, that crazy dream came true. I knew the pictures on her wall and the knickknacks that she kept. I knew the pattern of the quilt in the bedroom where she slept. The way I saw the universe forevermore was changed. kiss. I dreamed I fell asleep beneath a shady maple tree. I dreamed a dream within a dream, and still I wasn't free. I can't be sure of anything, I don't know which is true. The dream I had within a dream, or the dream I had of you. I'm still waiting for the kiss.
Is this your most personal album yet?
I always put a lot of personal stuff in my albums, although my listeners kind of have to guess which stories are true for me and which ones aren't.
I thought of that question when I heard the song, The Boy Who Wanted to Fly.
Yeah, I do have two songs about my family on this album. That is unusual. You're right about that. I lost my dad last year in October of 2012. And when I was going through his possessions, I found this crayon drawing of a fighter jet flying over a farm. And on the back, it said, Gary Anderson, age 9. So it was, you know, a picture that my dad had drawn when he was a kid, and he'd kept it all these years. So the song came out of that. I played it on his ukulele, which is in terrible shape. It's full of cracks, and you can hardly tune it, but it felt really good to be playing his ukulele on that song.
I think it's very cool that you take the listener on that journey with you. Let's enjoy Jamie's tribute to her dad, the boy who wanted to fly.
Flies through a crayon sky over a brightly colored countryside in a childish hand. On the other side, it said, Gary Anderson, age 9. He was the boy. He was the boy. He was the boy who wanted to fly. Only 17, he decided to enlist. His parents signed permission and gave a goodbye kiss. The Air Force didn't see him exactly eye to eye. They put him behind a desk. Still he dreamed of the sky. He was the boy. Buddies there on base. He met
woman fell in love, and soon the babies came. Though he became a salesman, he always loved to play with a guitar in his hands. He could fly that way. He was the boy. Up there in a bright blue crayon sky. He was the boy. He was the boy. He was the boy who wanted to fly.
Of course, doing the kind of radio show I do, I love the song Carla Williams Kissed Me. How much of that song is your story?
Well, it started off as an exercise from a songwriting circle. And I can't even remember what the assignment was. They might have given me the first line or something. Some of it is true. For me, I just kind of used my own experiences and wrote them into a few other details that weren't quite mine.
So you've kissed 1,000 girls?
It might be more like, 565. But I have kissed a lot of girls. I've been out since the 70s, and I had a real good time in my 20s, so I probably kissed a lot of girls. But her name wasn't Carla Williams. I have to tell you where I got that name. Her name actually was Lila Jaquith, but that doesn't sing very well.
No.
And I would love to find Lila again, by the way, but we haven't seen each other since we were 7 or 8. So, anyway,
she probably married someone with the last name Williams.
Probably. And all the Carla Williams of the world will probably hunt me down, and half of them will be mad at me, and half of them will like the song. So I have a good friend of mine named Jamie, and he's also a singer-songwriter. He's kind of a dorky guy, very sweet, very, very loving, but... So in it was either middle school or high school, he was asked by the most popular girl in school, whose name was Carla Williams, if she would help her with her math homework. And he was very excited, right? Because, getting dates was big for him. And he rushes over to her house to help her with her math homework, quote unquote. And as it turns out, that's all she wanted. She just wanted help with her math homework. And I thought, well, I'm putting her in the song then. So maybe she'll surface and I can tell her what a great guy she missed out on.
So let's hear the song, Carla Williams Kissed Me.
It was raining in Seattle, but we never felt a drop. Only 10 we puckered up, I thought my heart would stop. She tasted just like caramel, her hand warm upon my knee. The day Carla Williams kissed me. It was sunny there in Phoenix, but I never felt the burn. Only 18 in that crummy bar, thought I had nothing to learn. She laughed and crooked her fingers. She said, baby, shake my tree. It was never good as the time Carla Williams kissed me. Ah, she kissed me. I've kissed 1,000 girls, I remember everyone. Some tasted like candy, some made me wanna run. Thank you. ice. At 55, I can't believe that lightning has struck twice. She has a sexy grin, oh, what she does to me. It's even better than the time. It's even better than the time. Oh, it's even better than the time. Carla Williams kissed me. Kissed me. Did that sound like a kiss? I don't know.
I picked five or six songs from your other albums that I want to talk about. Of course, I want to talk about No Closet, and that's probably the song by you I've played the most over the years because it's kind of an anthem, and that really fits on a lot of shows. It's the one I played on my very first radio show.
Oh, awesome.
And that show was only 30 minutes, and I only played five songs, and that was one of them.
Wow, thanks. I'm honored.
I've never got a chance to get you to talk about No Closet.
I wrote that before a gig I had in upstate New York, and I felt like I needed an anthem about gay folks and about being strong and who we were, and I thought it should be a sing-along. And anthems are hard to write. At least they're hard for me to write because it's really easy to slip into, you know, schlocky cliches, and I didn't want to do that. And so I wrote that song and wasn't sure about it. It was brand new, but I got up on stage, and I think it was Syracuse, and played the song, and they loved it. They sang along, and I thought, well, okay, maybe I've got something here. And I did it at my shows for years. And then I also have a choral arrangement, and so choruses have done it too. It's a strengthening song.
From the 1992 album, Center of Balance, here's No Closet.
Some think a closet is where I should be, but I don't belong there. I need light to see. It's much too confining. No air I can't breathe. Well, I can read a map. I know where I'm supposed to be. No closet for me. No closet for me. Closet sucks. Shout about gay and lesbian pride, and we belong in the streets to walk without fear. We belong in the open, telling everyone we're queer. We belong in the hearts of our family. We belong everywhere, out, proud, and free.
And here's something Jamie probably has not heard. As I have access to the radio archives of the KPFT show Queer Voices, from when it was called Lesbian and Gay Voices, I found her song No Closet being used under a PSA. Though the sound quality from the old tape is not perfect, it's only a minute long, and was read by my friend Deborah Bell regarding the upcoming 1993 March on Washington for Lesbian, Gay, and Bi Equal Rights.
We belong in the streets to walk without fear.
In 1987, over 650,000 lesbians, gays, their families, and friends converged in Washington, D.C. Days of lobbying, celebration, protest, and remembrance. It was the largest civil rights demonstration in the history of this country. On April 25, 1993, we will march again. This is Deborah Bell, the national organizer of the 1993 March on Washington for Lesbian, Gay, and Bi Equal Rights and Liberation. Join us in the nation's capital as we take a stand against discrimination and make a call for justice. To find out more, call 1-800-832-2889.
Talk about when cats take over the world.
I am probably best known for that song. It's been used as a soundtrack for I don't know how many YouTube videos. I hear from all kinds of people about that song. And where it came from was there's a song by Emily Katz. She's a singer-songwriter from Texas. And she has a song about bass players taking over the world because she's a bass player and everyone ignores the bass players. And it's a funny song. And I was listening to it and I thought, well, bass players aren't taking over my world, but cats sure are. So I thought, well, what would a cat-centered world look like? So I wrote that song, and people still request it, and I wrote that song back in the 90s sometime. I used to end all my shows with it.
World's in bad shape indeed. There's too much anger and greed, but I can see through the gloom. Change is coming soon, when folks will be very nice, and tuna will plummet in price, when cats take over the world. Everyone will be kind. Jump on the counter and eat whatever you find. You could cough up a hairball and no one would mind. Maybe we'd all purr when cats take over the world. The law, and everyone will keep their claws. Dogs will be shown no mercy. They'll be shipped to New Jersey. There will be no more cars. Cat haters will be sent to Mars. When cats take over the world, all trouble will cease. Jump on the bookcase and knock over whatever you please. You could clean your butthole in front of company. In public we could hurl when cats take over the world. Stare into thin air and pretend there's something there. We'll learn meditation and perfect manipulation. No one will ever get wet or have to go to the vet. When cats take over the world, when take over the world.
When Cats Take Over the World was from Jamie's 1999 CD, Never Assume. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Music Heritage, and I thank Jamie Anderson for the interview. It was a treat for me to do. There's a bit more on part two of this show, and a lot more of Jamie at jamieanderson.com. Let's get back to the CD, the new CD. The logical song to close the show is the last track on the CD, which I suspect is why you put it there. Tell us about Menopause Mambo.
Well, I have a song that I wrote several years ago called Menstrual Tango. And I'm middle-aged now, so it's not true for me. And so I joke that after extensive personal research, I wrote the sequel. And I thought it should be a mambo. Nice alliteration, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that song almost didn't make it on the album because, you know, the album's got 14 songs, which is a lot of songs, and I wasn't sure if I would have enough money and enough time to record 14 songs. So we recorded, I started to record Menopause Mambo, thinking that, well, you know, if we finish it, great, and if we don't, okay, we'll go on the album. And the bass player came in to do his part. Now, the bass player is this very well-known guy who's played with the Paul Winter Consort, with Judy Collins, all kinds of people, and he's really good, very, very nice. And I'm pretty sure he's straight. And he played through the song. And he looked at me, and he just couldn't stop laughing. And afterwards, I said, you know, Elliot, I'm not sure that song's going to make it on there. It depends on how much time we have and how much money it's all going to cost. And he looked at me, and he goes, don't pay me for that song. I want you to put it on the album.
How do the guys in your audiences react to that song?
Some of them really like it, and some of them just look embarrassed. And then occasionally, I see one of them lean over to ask his wife or his girlfriend what the hell I'm singing about.
That would be me. So would you introduce the song and I'll play it?
This song goes out to all the middle-aged and older women and the men and women who have to suffer with them.
Don't tell me to try meditation or to drink that nasty tea. Ointment from wild yams will not cure what's ailing me. Menopause mambo, menopause mambo. Turn up the air, then you'll see I've lost my butt. Take pity, send chocolate. Menopause mambo, menopause mambo. Growing hair.